Daybreak on BizNews is proudly brought to you by Bonitas, the medical aid for South Africa.
Good morning and welcome to the BizNews Daybreak. Today is Tuesday, the 18th of August. I am Patrick Kidd. First up, Reuters gives us the latest wrap from Wall Street. Here's what moved US markets overnight.
U.S. stocks fell on Monday, with the Dow and S&P 500 each shedding roughly 0.5%, and the Nasdaq dropping about 0.33%. With July's weak retail sales and jobs data fresh in their minds, investors were cautious as they waited for quarterly results from retailers. Home Depot is due to report on Tuesday, TJ Maxx's parent company on Wednesday, and retail bellwether Walmart on Thursday. Anna Rathbun is founder and CEO of Granadilla Advisory.
I'll be looking for more of the K-shaped economy narrative for the consumers, especially from companies like Walmart, TJ Maxx, and to a certain degree, Target as well. And what these companies are doing really to help the lower leg of the K-shaped economy, as well as trying to capture market share of people who are trying to stretch the dollar a little bit further coming from the middle class.
Among individual stock moves, Microsoft and Meta Platforms provided the biggest drags on the S&P 500, with both declining more than 3%. Chip stocks provided a boost, with Micron Technology adding 4% and Applied Materials climbing 5.5%. Meanwhile, oil futures settled up more than $2 per barrel as investor pessimism about diplomatic efforts to resolve the Iran war fanned global supply worries. That provided a boost to stocks of energy companies. Energy was the sole gainer among the S&P 500's 11 major sectors.
BizNews journalist Chris Stain sat down with Ron Weissenberg of the Accountability Group to dissect the ongoing crisis at Knysna Municipality, where the Hawks are now investigating corruption and a multi-million rand provincial intervention has largely failed to shift anything on the ground. Chris asked him, if the money and the support haven't worked, what will?
Well, it is already underway and it's focusing on corruption at this stage on a relatively small scale in the municipality. However, undoubtedly with the progression of the investigation, probably further points and charges will follow. The good thing is that it is underway and there is accountability at a higher level.
Let us talk about the intervention. To what extent has it failed?
That's a comprehensive question, and I think maybe we should start by saying to what extent has it succeeded? Well, it has succeeded in bringing attention to Knysna, which is really just a microcosm of many municipalities. Well over 100 municipalities have similar issues and problems that they're dealing with. In essence, following the unsuccessful attempt by province to place Knysna under Section 139C intervention, which was last September. And I say unsuccessful because it was supported and the accountability group of which I am a part was party to pushing for the full administration. Unsuccessful because the National Council of Provinces overturned the provincial ruling that administration should take place. That full administration would have resulted in the dissolution of the council, as it then was, elections within 90 days, and the normal political processes thereafter. What has happened is that we've had a Section 154 intervention instead, which is essentially a substantial amount of support and intervention by province. According to the Premier, some 70 to 80 million rand has been allocated and spent over the last at least 24 months. And notwithstanding that, and despite these incredible interventions, the revolving door of mayors and senior executives, specifically the management, has continued turning. And on the ground, although it's not always visible, very little has changed on a permanent basis.
At BNC9 last week, Corne Mulder, Dr. Theo de Jager, and Gerard Papenfuss, the group dubbed the Three Amigos, gave delegates an inside account of their 14 meetings in Washington.
We did not expect to be in the White House so often to meet such senior government officials. And at every meeting, we had 14 of them, at every meeting, Corneille would give the political analysis of what's going on here and what are the possible scenarios for the future. I spoke of agriculture, but also rural safety, kill the farmer, kill the boer, and the Expropriation Act. And of course, Gerard, and his English has improved a lot since. He spoke of employment equity and BEE and that kind of stuff. And then they would ask us questions and also try to bring these topics into a relation with each other. And it was this evening, and even if I live to be 100 years old, I will not forget that evening when Gerard was done. This one guy said, we've listened to you and we now want you to listen to us. We have a message for South Africa which we cannot seem to get through. We've said it over and over to the embassy here. We've said it to the visitors who came with President Ramaphosa. And we have said it to two or three other groups too, but we don't pick it up on the South African side. And the message is simple. You want to restore trade relations? Then we want these four things to happen. We want the ANC to distance itself from kill the farmer, kill the boer. We want farm murders to be declared a priority crime similar to rhino poaching or cash in transit robberies. We want American investors to be exempted from BEE and employment equity. And we want the Expropriation Act to be changed, so that market-related compensation is being paid at the end of a legal process and not at the beginning of it.
Healthcare matters, but what matters most?
Having cover for the people who keep this business going.
Bonitas is there for you when it counts. Bonitas Medical Aid for South Africa. Visit bonitas.co.za and find your plan.
Also from BNC9, Sasol CEO Simon Baloyi, who in his first full year at the helm turned a loss of nearly 70 rand a share into double-digit profit. He told delegates what it took to hold that strategy together and why he believes Sasol's roughly 27,000 determined employees can do anything they set their minds to.
When Sasol spends lots of money, when we stood up in the investment conference and we said we're going to spend 60 billion in the next 3 years, people find it, that's a massive number, but we do that. We do that. In South Africa alone, we spend almost 20 billion rands annually on making sure that we sustain our massive asset footprint. So we continue to do that. So we have to use advances in technology, what we're seeing in the latest development, to make sure that we're efficient in how we use that money. So I think, ladies and gentlemen, for us, we know that the path ahead might be uncertain or uneven. But we are determined. The people of Sasol are determined to make sure we create value. For not only for our shareholders. It's our bosses, but we create value for our shareholders. But our purpose for being here is to make sure that we leave a lasting legacy. It's something that I've grown up with. It's something that all of us want to do. We want to make a difference to the country that we live in. We believe in it. Wherever we are as well, we want to take the South African spirit to make sure we can also export it globally. That we have to see the positive, no matter how dire the situation might seem. We are firmly convinced that there's nothing that can hold us back. Anything worth having must be built by men and women that have a shared vision for the future, what they think the future can look like, and they must build it. Nothing comes down from heaven. We have to do the work ourselves. So we are committed, and the bold ambition, transformation journey, and ambition that we are on, at least myself as a CEO, I always stand confident knowing that can happen because of the Sasol people, because it is them that is going to make this a reality. We are like 27,000 strong, and yeah, with 27,000 people that are all determined to do something, that there is nothing impossible for us to do.
And to close, again from BNC9, Afrimat CEO Andries van Heerden on one of the company's biggest recent moves, the acquisition of Lafarge South Africa. He told delegates they didn't buy it for the cement, and what they found when they got inside was a business in far worse a state than originally anticipated.
2023-24, around about there, Lafarge came, Lafarge South Africa was in trouble. The European owners wanted to sell the business, and we did a deal and we bought the business. And Alec, we didn't buy it for the cement. The cement is a small part of it, but it has the best quarries in South Africa. Okay. And we bought it for the quarries. And it's interesting, those of you that are interested can go and look in the world. There are companies like Vulcan and Martin Marietta and a CRH and a few companies like that that have built business cases around quarries, because you have a very interesting moat around a quarry, because you have a relatively heavy, low-value product, which gives you a very definite moat if you are well-situated. And that was why we bought Lafarge, but we also got the cement business, and we'll get to that. Fly ash business was incorporated in that. That is used as a cement extender, and it is something that we also enjoyed having. The business was in a terrible state. You want to talk about state capture on a corporate level, that's what happened there. We literally fired one person per day for about 3 months in a row on corruption, theft, dishonesty. You just couldn't believe it. So we had to change that culture and turn it around. And I can say to you that the quarries are now fully integrated and they are performing very, very well and making this acquisition an exceptionally good acquisition. We're still battling a little bit with the cement. The cement business is turned around. Operationally, it's doing very well. But the cement industry, and I was really interested to hear what the minister said just now, because that is what we need. The cement industry in South Africa is in a difficult position. If you don't have a cement factory in the Western Cape or in Zimbabwe, you are going to battle to make a living in cement. But we've turned it around. It is not 100% profitable yet, but it's doing a lot better.
That's your Daybreak for Tuesday, the 18th of August. Thank you for listening. See you tomorrow. I'm Patrick Kidd for BizNews.com.
Daybreak on BizNews is proudly brought to you by Bonitas, the medical aid for South Africa.